It is Saturday, September 28th, 2007, 10:06 a.m. on the central coast of California. Today on Geek Speak, the week in geek news, and your questions and comments of technology. The bandwidth for geekspeak.org is provided by GNI, gnihosting.com. Welcome to Geek Speak, bridging the gaps between geeks and the rest of humanity. I'm your host, Lyle Troxell. Please keep in mind the views expressed on our program are not necessarily those of KUSP. On this episode of Geek Speak, we'll be taking your calls with questions and comments, but in the first half, we're going to cover the week in geek news. During the second half, when I invite your participation, you're welcome to call us up, 476-2800, toll free at 1-800-655-5877. You can contact us right now. Just go to geekspeak.org. I'll give out that contact information again when I invite your participation in about a half an hour. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Cruise.io, providing local internet services including DSL, computer care, classes, and website builders. Information about Cruise.io membership is available online at cruise.io.com or by calling 459-6301. This is Geek Speak. My name is Lyle Troxell. In the air with me, Sean Cleveland, Technical Marketing Manager at NVIDIA. Good morning.
Good morning, Lyle.
And Miles, your microphone is making horrible noises, so could you grab mic 3? Miles Elam, he's a Slacker geek and student.
Good morning, Lyle.
So we're going to do a lot of news this week. And the second half, we're going to take people's calls. So let's just dive right into it. For geek news this week, what's at the top of your brain, Miles?
AT&T has added some new clauses to its terms of service.
Companies do this all the time. What is the clause that's so appealing to you?
The clause is that AT&T has the right to suspend your account and all services, quote, for conduct that AT&T believes, and one part of this is, tends to damage the name or reputation of AT&T or its parents, affiliates, and subsidiaries.
Do you have AT&T service?
Yes, I do.
So if you said, man, my service isn't very good today on the air, you could lose your service?
Technically, I mean, according to this, I could see them making a case for me being on air saying, hey, look at this, they're doing this bad thing, is besmirching the name of AT&T.
Sounds like
so I'm taking my, you know, taking my service in my own hands, I guess.
This is terrible.
Why don't you dislike it, Sean?
Well, they're in a position where they can do this. Where's anyone else going to go?
Well, there's other carriers, right?
Who?
Isn't there? Well, there's Nextel.
Well, for home phone service?
Yeah.
What are your options?
Is it the same contract for home phone service?
I'm in the mountains. I've got AT&T and... AT&T. I guess I could go to Comcast and get an internet phone.
Perfect.
I guess, but...
Maybe that's their justification. Hey, there's another option. You can get cable.
I'm in the redwoods and trees fall all the time. I lose my internet connectivity and my power. I don't know. Not such a good thing. I guess I could rely on my cell phone. Oh, wait. I have AT&T.
Do you think that could ever hold up in court? The idea of a corporation saying you can't say bad things about us or we cancel you. We don't serve you. We're going to limit your free speech.
At this point, AT&T and the court decisions that go in their favor a lot of times, nothing will surprise me anymore.
Really?
Honestly.
That was good.
Although I will say, if AT&T decides to cut off my service, I pledge to besmirch their name every week for the duration. So
the
just saying,
works.
You know, what's good for the goose is good for the gander.
I mean, we reach tens to maybe 100 listeners a week
who can't get any other service but AT&T. All right, thank you very much, Miles, for that. Wonderful company, AT&T, putting changes to their contract. All right. Sean, next news story.
This is interesting. We all heard that Microsoft Windows XP would be going away in January. January 31st, manufacturers had to move to Vista because Microsoft wasn't supporting XP anymore. Now they are. They've extended that until June now. And it sounds like a Windows XP Starter Edition is going to be sold until June 2010.
What?
There is a downgrade service for PC makers. if you bought a PC, Vista Business or Ultimate, Vista Ultimate from Fujitsu, and there are, I think Dell is also doing this too. You can downgrade your Vista to XP. But those are the really high-end versions of Vista. Ultimate is, you know, a $400 version.
Wait, so if you bought a really expensive operating system and you're unhappy, you can actually downgrade to a...
You can downgrade, but only if you have the Business and Ultimate. If you had the home or...
This is Fujitsu? Do they sell
a lot? Or
the
Premium. I don't think you can downgrade those.
Interesting. Do they sell a lot of computers, Fujitsu, to end users? Or is this a business class type of situation?
Oh, Fujitsu is one of the biggest... Yeah, they're really large.
I'm just wondering if
this... seller of PC notebooks, especially to corporations.
Yeah, I was wondering if it's just a business solution.
You know, my last two companies I worked at, I had Fujitsu notebooks.
Now, why would Fujitsu do this?
I think it's demand from users, especially their corporate clients.
Because they're really frustrated.
You got to understand, XP is something that's been in the business for a long time, and everybody knows that their software works, or they've figured out how to make software work, or get software that does work. All of a sudden, Vista comes in, and things... It takes a little work to get all of your software, you know, moved to Vista, because this is a very different platform, especially if you have home-spun software that your company relies on. And they're probably getting so much, you know, demand for XP that they had to do this.
So, Sean, right now on your laptop, are you running XP or Vista?
I'm running XP.
Lyle, do you use Vista?
I have a Vista machine at home at work. That I've been testing to see if I want to start using it. I'm not using it for any of the clients. But I recently had to add a printer, and it was so easy. There's some things on it that are really quite good.
Yeah, people keep complaining that they can't access network shares over Vista. And for me, it's worked really well. In fact, XP, when I'm on my VPN connected to work, I've always had a problem trying to access my local shares on another computer that's not connected to my VPN. And Vista had no problems. I felt that was really good. But then the other thing that drives me crazy about Vista is I was so excited about these faster boot times, and I've yet to see them. Maybe the first time I install Vista, see it, and then it just goes away. And I have one computer now. It literally takes 2 to 3 minutes.
Have you tried using like a USB fob thing? Because that's the big thing is that it's not – the reason why they say fast boot times, not because it's booting from scratch. It's because it's booting from like sleep.
Yeah.
Or whatever that narcotic problem is.
There's a narcotic,
excuse me. Okay, so the thing.
There's an actual name of their technology that uses a flash drive. I think they recommend one gig to store files for faster access.
Cache, basically. But
yeah. I'm hearing, you know, if you go look at Tom's Hardware, they've done extensive testing on this, and nobody has proved that that makes your system any faster. It's supposed to help with notebooks. Yeah. I think if you've got a notebook with a 4,200 RPM hard drive, I might make, you know, 5 to 10 second
increase
in time. Yeah,
okay,
or decrease in time.
Miles, the reason why you asked that question is you want to know, are we recommending Vista to people? Is that kind of what you're going at?
Well, no, I was just wondering what people's experience was with it, because I have not as yet used Vista.
Have you turned on a Windows machine in, I don't know, 6 months?
Yes, I have Windows installed on my laptop, which just died again recently. But still, it was installed and I had used it periodically.
But not Vista.
We should stick with our recommendation.
Is it still our recommendation that you don't do
Vista? Our recommendation
is
if you're going to buy a new machine and all new peripherals and you're not relying on a piece of hardware that you already own, then sure, go with Vista. But if you're going to upgrade to Vista, you need to run the Vista upgrade tool. There's a tool that you can download and run in XP that will go off and determine before you install Vista, whether Vista can recognize all of your attached devices.
Okay. Normally when someone comes up and says, I'm going to buy a new computer, what should I buy? The first question I ask, are you familiar with Macintosh or Windows environment? And traditionally the way they answer is the way I answer their question, because changing platform is a big deal.
It is.
At this point, though, I think if they were going to want, you know, they're used to Windows and they're going to buy a new machine, I would say, well, you can get a Mac or Vista because you want to get new peripherals anyway. So there's like this kind of, is that true? Or do you think it's still easier to stay on a Windows Vista machine rather than switching to a different platform? Don't have an opinion on that. You don't have a lot of Mac experience, so that's kind of a very fair question.
I just don't, with a Macintosh.
The only time he talks about Macintosh is to make fun of me.
Well, making fun of Miles is always fun. All right, next news story.
You'd be surprised what adding a little memory to your computer or a faster hard drive can do. If you've got XP already, I just don't see any reason to move on.
Yeah, I'd agree. Don't migrate.
If you're a gamer and you want better gaming performance, buy a better GPU. If you're crunching video, encoding, that sort of thing, and you want more performance, get a faster CPU. If you just want more performance overall, think about memory. But don't get more than 2 gigs of memory. It's a waste. It really doesn't give you any.
Sean, thank you very much. It's a good suggestions. Miles, next news story.
Apple has released a new update to their iPhone, iPhone firmware version 1.1.1. However, this has caused a few wrinkles, namely for people who have unlocked their iPhone to access other networks such as T-Mobile, or in the case of customers in Europe, just whatever their carrier may be. Currently, iPhones must be purchased along with an AT&T wireless or cell phone account, and that's it. That's the only carrier you can use an iPhone with.
But you can buy the iPhone without carrier service.
Sort of, but you can't activate it without using some hacking software.
Okay.
You're basically hacking the iPhone so that it thinks that, oh, yeah, it's okay to wake up, and then you can use it on, for example, T-Mobile's site. We know someone who's done this. At the same time, this new update doesn't just lock it back down again. It doesn't just update the software. It has been found to brick the iPhone. What I mean by brick, for those who don't know the terminology, means that the iPhone stops working, period.
Except as a heavy object.
Right.
No, it's not really a brick. It's more like a shim.
It's true. It's too small for a brick.
But in other words, it cannot be used anymore. It goes dark. Nothing works on it anymore. And even if you wanted to switch to AT&T, you can't activate it. It becomes inaccessible. And because you've hacked the iPhone to make it accessible on another network,
lost the warranty.
You are no longer on the warranty for Apple.
There is no way to get it back to the shipping version of the phone?
Yes, you can. But what you have to do is you have to unhack it. You have to stop it working on, for example, your T-Mobile service.
Yeah.
And then do the update and then wait for someone to hack it again.
Oh, I see, before the update. Hack. So what you're saying is if you've hacked your iPhone, do not do the update.
I remember what I heard. Yes. To get new updates to work, you do have to do that. I think you have to get rid of the hack, take it back to its original state, which means you still need the SIM card that gave you access to the AT&T network.
And you need an AT&T account.
I don't know if you need an AT&T account. I think you just need the SIM card to make it go back to its original state so that you can apply the new hack.
Right.
Because no one has figured out yet how to make a hack that takes you from the previous hack to this new one.
Right.
I'm sure it's going to happen.
Right.
That's what I read this week.
And as another wrinkle to this, and this one is one that would affect me, is if you have third-party applications on the iPhone, it won't brick your phone. It just means that when you put the update on there, all of your third-party applications will get wiped off or made inaccessible. They actually aren't removed from the system. They're just inaccessible.
So here's the thing. One of the third-party applications you got on your iPhone is an SSH client. There's a whole bunch of applications you have.
It's
a very wonderful application. It makes the phone even more useful and desirable. In fact, I want to get one now because of that feature so that I can actually administer machines wherever I am. Why would Apple want that to be disabled?
Apple is – their official stance is not that they're trying to disable them. What they're doing is saying that their API – the system is not frozen yet. They're still working with it. And as such, they're not going to go out of their way to make sure they don't break third-party apps.
Mm-hmm.
What they're saying is that they're not going to specifically try to help them. And so when the new update comes in, because you have all these different wrinkles that could possibly happen, what's going to happen is they're just going to wipe the system and start over again with the new update, in which case you'd have to wait for the installers to be ported to the new version and then reinstall everything.
All right. What about the phone service? Why would they want to brick the phone? Are they getting a kickback from AT&T on every phone that's being – every contract or something, and that's why Apple wants
to use AT&T? Well, there's an exclusive deal on there, and if Apple did not do – their own due diligence to make sure that, or their own effort to make sure that it was still on their service, then they would be in breach of contract with AT&T. At least that's how I read
things. That's the assumption.
I'm not a lawyer. But at the same time, it's because people are tweaking with it in different ways. There are multiple hacks that are out there. Apple would have to test for each of those hacks and work with it, and Apple never actually sanctioned their use.
Right.
So if they actually went back in and did testing to make sure that the hacks didn't mess up the phone, then that means that it may be giving an implicit
okay,
it's okay.
Sure. All right. So if you have modified your iPhone, don't do this hack. Don't do this patch. Well, is iTunes forcing it? I mean, how does the process work? Have you been able to sync your phone without?
No, it's totally by choice. Mm-hmm. You have to go in and say, okay, now update. There's a new firmware version available. Update the firmware within iTunes. So the whole scheme of things is if you have a hacked iPhone where you're using it on a different carrier, then do not update. If you have third-party applications and you want to update, back up all of your contacts, everything that you have on there first, and then do the update because you'll have to reinstall it. But if you have one that you have not made any changes to in terms of third-party applications, you're using it just as a stock iPhone, from what I hear, you can do the update and all of your settings remain exactly the same and there's no change. It's perfectly safe.
Cool. And which makes sense because Apple, of course, has tested it quite a bit. Speaking of Apple and iTunes, you mentioned Daria and I, my wife and I, just recently tried to get through the process of how can we get The Daily Show and The Colbert Report, both shows that we like to watch in our home legally, for the cheapest rate. So we took a look at cable. We took a look at different services. And we finally ended up buying these the shows for a month, basically, from iTunes. I think it's 16 shows for a certain amount of money. And downloading them and playing them off our PC. That's how we watch television. Because we don't have television. We, you know, VCR and DVD. Mm-hmm. And it seemed to work pretty well. The quality's really great. The shows are available right away. I liked it. Now, it is DRM content. I can't do anything with this content very easily.
Can you fast forward over commercials?
Yeah. There's no commercials.
Oh, no commercials.
No,
really?
I'm paying for it.
Yeah. Oh, I have no idea.
You know, in fact, we've tried a few other different television shows using like NBC's service and ABC's service. They have some of their shows with commercials. And the players are almost always kind of clunky and broken. Like, they can't do true full screen on a second monitor. It's kind of like a Flash-type plugin you've got to install. I couldn't get it to work on Internet Explorer on
How is the quality of the video? The
quality of the video is pretty good on these services.
Even when you made it full screen?
Yeah. The quality is good enough resolution to do full screen.
And when you say second screen, you're talking about you've got your desktop screen is on like a monitor.
Right.
And your second screen is your television.
That's right. I
have an S-video cable. And you're actually moving your video over to the second screen, making it full size so you can watch on your TV.
That's correct.
Okay.
So the video card that I've got is an NVIDIA card with a second. One of the ports is a, S-video connector.
Yeah.
And
you know
so
what's nice about that is the television has a lower resolution anyway.
Right. You don't even notice it.
It's just what, like, it's by 400, I think.
I think it's got 400 720.
Lines. 420. No.
No?
No. A regular TV has 420 lines.
Lines. Yeah, sorry.
So that, if you were to play on your computer screen, is really small.
Right.
So you can actually take really small internet content, and it looks really good on a television set. That's really cool.
Yeah, and it's worked pretty well. The impetus for this is that I've downloaded via BitTorrent before, and Demonoid.com, which is a pretty popular site for stealing shows, has gone down recently. And doing this, I really wanted to do it legally. I wanted to do the situation where I'm paying for the work.
I think everybody wants to do things legally.
Yeah.
There just needs to be a method for doing this.
And the thing is, on iTunes, these shows, each of these half-an-hour shows are $2. It's just not – it's too much money.
$2 for a half-hour show?
Right. Exactly. It's like, no way, because that's how much their television shows are. So with these packs, you can get down to like 75 cents. I'm like, okay, 75 cents a show, I can do that. And so that's why we ended up doing it. Huh. And mostly because we looked at cable costs, and the cable package is what? You get like 50 channels for a lot of money, and I don't want that much TV in my house.
Yeah.
I've got small kids. I only want very restricted content. I don't want them to be able to turn on the TV. And Daria and I have this feeling that if a cable feed is happening, it'll slowly become more popular in our home, and that's not what we want. So we're kind of restricting ourselves with technology to not watch everything.
Speaking of video and TV shows and moving stuff around, the new update to the iPhone has the iPhone supporting video out.
Oh, that's cool. With what kind of connector?
You buy this $50 adapter, and it's a component out.
Yeah, that's great.
Component out with RCA.
Component out has an easy S-video connection.
Let's bring Alex on.
Oh, let's bring Alex on. Yeah, we can do that. Sure. Alex, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Thank you very much, Lyle.
Thanks for coming on. Do you have news for us to jump into?
Sure, I can jump into some security news if you like.
Alex Lees from Orange County.
Excellent.
Go ahead, hit us with some security news.
All right. Well, this one is not necessarily technology-oriented other than, you know, having to deal with stolen laptops and all, but it seems the Gap has recently announced that they had a breach of security with a lost laptop. And it's a pretty big one. We're looking at 800,000 job applicants could have lost, you know, had their social security number compromised.
Oh man!
So
the Gap clothing store.
Yep.
Wow.
So some employee had a laptop. They were using it. They happened to be an HR person that had all these resumes, and it got stolen.
Yeah. Well, actually, I was reading up, and they were saying something about it's potentially related to a contractor that they were working with that, you know, didn't follow proper, you know, good practices, and then lost some information, but I don't see a whole lot of detail about, you know, exactly whose laptop it was, but it's a bad thing. I mean, when they, and because they had, you know, the data was not encrypted on the laptop, so they have to go through and, due to all the regulations, they have to go through and send notifications out to all the people who potentially had their Social Security number compromised. Mm-hmm. And that can be expensive. I mean, you figure 800,000 Social Security numbers, and they, you know, on average cost maybe, what, $50 to $100 per Social Security number for dealing with notifications, probably upwards of $100, because they're also covering a one-year credit monitoring
now,
cost.
For don't them. They only have to do this for in California, or is this, are these laws more?
No, these laws are everywhere, actually. I think there's now there's only a handful of states that don't have them, and most of them already are, you know, that if they don't, they're considering getting them in place.
I got to say, this kind of thing is wonderful, because that company is going to get hit very hard with their finances, and they'll restrict their where that data goes. And people will stop collecting so many Social Security numbers. Recently, I can't recall what Daria was doing, but my wife was ordering some more checks, right? So we go through this normal check house, and they're like, you can mail us or fax us a void check from your last account, or you can give us your Social Security number, your date of birth, your mother's maiden name, all this personal data that a check company just doesn't need. You know, there's no reason for it. And I feel like if more companies are hit with these major bills because they had this data around, they'll stop collecting it, I hope.
Yeah, and well, the more important thing is they need to protect it if they are going to collect it. I mean, if they have a valid need, that makes sense. But companies just have not been figuring out, you need to protect this stuff. You need to, you know, make sure that it's encrypted. And if it's not encrypted, you're watching exactly how and where it goes. And
And that it's safe. I get that. I get that, but I don't know how many employees the Gap has, but they don't have 800,000 employees. So for some reason, they're online.
No, these are applicants.
Applicants, right. I know. Yeah. Their online forms requested a Social Security number. Why? Mm-hmm. They're not hiring the person, right? So why isn't the Social Security number happening during the hire date rather than the submit a resume date?
Well, when you actually, this is applicant people. You know, when you go in and fill out an application for a job, you put your Social Security number so they can do the background checks.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, the way to do it correctly is you take in people's resumes, you look at the good ones, you interview those ones. Those ones you decide to interview, then that's when you do the background check. So the subset is 80,000, you know, 8,000 people instead of 800,000 people. And that's the kind of thing that I hope the corporations start doing. It's possible they'll start doing better security, which is a good thing as well. The University of California, when the laws came out to in California, which is I think should happen in California earlier, about this kind of thing, we went through an entire change of how we collect information at UCSC. It used to be the way that you track students and deal with what courses they're in and stuff was their Social Security number. So a person like me who deals with a little bit of this data would have copies of different departments' Social Security numbers, these students' Social Security numbers. Now on my laptop, I only have this student ID number, which is only useful at UCSC and isn't really useful for getting any data.
My company has assigned us a log number that's part of our employee ID and various other things. And when we go to the doctor, the dentist, wherever, we're not supposed to hand out our Social Security number.
That's the
we
identification.
That. Yeah, that's our identification.
Yeah, and that's actually a big reason that this, you know, this becomes such a problem is that there's not a whole lot of information that can be used to uniquely identify a person. And so usually software developers or people who are, you know, defining the requirements say, hey, you know, this number works really well for identifying a person. And then they go ahead and use it. And that's where a lot of the failure occurs is right there.
Yeah. I think a home phone number is a pretty good use, too, because that's not totally unique.
Driver's license or ID card?
Driver's license number is what...
It depends. Even driver's license numbers, some states require that to be, or consider that to be...
personal.
Protected information. Yeah, personal information.
But the Social Security number isn't? That's funny.
You know, the other thing I wonder is, since the Social Security numbers are stolen, can you get a new number associated with your name? Can you request that from a Social Security department?
You know, I have no idea.
I was wondering,
that.
How does the Gap deal with this, right? The data's out there. There's no way that you can just say, my credit card's stolen, give me a new one.
They have to notify all of them. And
then
they
have
to
Social Security.
Right, they have to notify all of them, and they have to pay for credit protection for all of them.
Yeah, credit monitoring for a year, and then beyond that, you're kind of on your own.
The reality is somebody probably stole this notebook, wiped it, and, you know.
Actually, no, people that are stealing laptops are doing a lot more identity theft. Yeah, just email addresses you can sell. You know, just those are worth some money.
So, Alex, do you know anything? Actually, we'll come back. I want to talk about the eBay.
Okay, we'll talk about eBay in just a minute. GeekSpeak is supported by Henry J. Ramirez, DDS in Santa Cruz, specializing in cosmetic and family dentistry, using digital technology for less radiation, and offering one-appointment crowns and veneers. For appointments and more information, 423-2447. You're listening to Geek Speak. We're now taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800 or toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-5877. And you're welcome, of course, at any time to contact us by sending us email at geekspeak.org. I have something to read. Where the heck is it? Oh, here it is. Oh, yeah, that's right. Castle Cottage, which always follows Geek Speak, has a very special show today. Tune in for the usual songs and stories along with live reports from the Art Car Festival at Santa Cruz Museum of Art and History. Host Susan Freeman gives a play-by-play on the rare assembly of dozens of creatively modified cars. That's Castle Cottage at 11 a.m. today on Central Coast Public Radio, KUSP. GeekSpeak on KUSP is supported by Business with Pleasure, a full-service business center in Scotts Valley offering computer rentals, printing, design, shipping, delivered office supplies, notary public, and more. Information is online at businesswithpleasure.com. The geeks this morning are Sean Cleveland, Miles Elam, and Alex Leas. We are taking your calls with questions and comments of technology. We'll take anything you'd like. The phone numbers, if you'd like to ask us a question or add correct us even, would be fine. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, 476-2800. Toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And Sean, you were about to ask?
Yeah. So Tuesday morning, it appeared that eBay had gotten hacked. They're calling him a fraudster. There's a difference. I'll get into that in a moment. He posted... He basically came online appearing as 1,200 eBay users.
Wow.
And he made these posts in a way that it appeared as though he had logged in with these accounts. Like he had this account information, he logged in, and then he posted name, contact information, and credit card information for each of these users.
Wow.
But it appears that the credit card information was wrong. They did not match the users.
Well, that's good.
Which is why they're calling him a fraudster. There are people who are saying that the credit card, since it didn't match the user's card info, they think it's just a fake attempt to scare eBayers.
Yeah, but he got hacked on the system. And
bottom line is, why was he able to log on as 1,200 people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. That's interesting. I just had trouble with my eBay account. I couldn't log in, and they wouldn't send me an updated
Oh, I'm sure their security got a little tougher this week.
I bet it did.
What do you think about that, Alex? And
so, wait, this guy posted this information. It was a credit card number and the name and other details on their forum.
No,
what was he
trying
to achieve with posting it? Was he just trying to say, hey, I have it? Or
I don't know if he actually did it on a forum. He just logged in as these eBay users and posted the information. I don't know exactly where he posted the information.
But he posted on eBay.
Yeah, I think
eBay
I remember
servers.
Reading it was on some forum on eBay or something like that, but I could be wrong.
But even Even having a person's eBay account name and their real name would be difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, they shouldn't have that.
they'd have to get access to the database effectively, but
not
of course,
good.
If the credit card numbers are not being stored in encrypted form, they're actually it's not even just so much as like with Social Security numbers, there is no actual requirement to encrypt. The requirement by law is that you have to notify if it would happen to get out in an unencrypted form. But with Social Security number, or rather with credit card numbers, is actually a requirement to encrypt them. And that's part of the CIA regulation.
He did post it to the eBay.com trust and safety forums.
So he posted this information to the forums.
Yeah, he logged into the forums and then posted the contact information for that person with credit card information.
Alex,
for 1,200 users.
Alex, you keep on saying that encrypting is the solution, but let me ask you this. If I've got a system and I'm collecting credit card numbers and I'm encrypting them, and then every month I'm charging them some amount, so I have to unencrypt them and send the credit card information to a clearinghouse, how do you make sure that the key to that encryption is safe?
Yeah, so you just touched on the hard part about encryption. Actually, performing the encryption operation is easy. The hard part is really managing those keys. Generally, some of the better solutions we've seen is where there's a centralized hardened system that actually manages the keys, and it's separated out from the systems that actually perform the operations or separate from the data itself.
So the clearing, there's some piece that does the clearinghouse, and it has the key, and the other system says, here, bill this credit card, and it sends it encryptedly, and the only thing that can actually encode it is the one that needs to use it.
Actually, what it does is the systems that want to decrypt the data, basically have an authentication token against the system, against the system that maintains the keys.
Interesting.
And you know, they go and say, "Hey, I am who I am. Here's some data I'd like to decrypt," and it can then, you know, go through and verify, are you allowed to decrypt that data, et cetera, et cetera, and it does it for you. So all the encryption operations are offloaded elsewhere.
But it just takes your password to initiate that unencryption.
You can do various different levels of authentication. You can do some certificate stuff, but of course you still have to protect that information.
Yeah.
The key thing is it's layers. I mean, ultimately, there, you know, if you follow the follow down the path, you can probably get all of the pieces of information, but it does take a lot more work, and it makes the
and smart people like you are focusing on making it bulletproof.
It will, as bulletproof as you can.
Okay, we're going to start taking calls from Hollister. Neil, welcome to GeekSpeak.
Good morning. I'm hoping one or more of you gentlemen can solve my dilemma. I have some excellent hardware, a G5. I just got a video camera, and we'll soon be buying a digital still camera. Want to get a keyboard, and yet I'm an absolute neophyte when it comes to exploiting the powers of OS X, and I want to master programs like FileMaker, MS Office, video, music programs. Where can I go? Who can I pay in order to educate me on these matters?
Well, you should donate to KOSP because, of course, we cover some of these topics every week. But but there are schools for this. Miles and Sean, you guys have suggestions? I mean, Cabrillo College does have some classes from community college thing. You're in Hollister. I don't know if the local community college there is.
Yeah, I don't have time for that kind of academic nonsense. I've been there, done that. I want to pay somebody to sit down next to me. I'm not cheap, but I want quick results.
So you want someone to come and do a personal training on computer use?
Absolutely.
All right. Well, if you're a personal trainer, you've heard the call from Neil. Welcome to call us, and we'll post your information up on our website if you'd like to help Neil out.
You'd be surprised how much you can learn by going through the tutorials that come with software.
Yeah, but there's nothing like a trainer, right?
Yeah, there's
time is an issue with me. Yeah. I'm willing to pay to get it faster.
Yeah.
I mean, especially if this is all for using on your Mac, I'd recommend even checking, like going down to your local Apple store. I know for some
local
of the basic
Apple
stuff,
store.
They will,
in Hollister. It's like an hour drive.
That's true. But Alex, what were you thinking about at the Apple store?
Well, what they offer a lot of little free training for anybody who has a Mac for some of the basic apps. But you might be able to check with them and see if they have recommended vendors for doing personal tutoring and
but
stuff.
Neil, I definitely hear you. You want to get a professional geek to come to your place and train
Absolutely.
You. And there's a lot of geeks that do, computer repair. I'm sure there's some that do training. If John Tracy was still doing that kind of work, I know he'd come out and do that. But I don't currently have anybody, and I don't know of a resource other than I know that in Santa Cruz, for example, there's a lot of business cards at Santa Cruz Electronics, and they've got, different skill sets and stuff on their business cards, kind of post on the wall of people that are professional geeks that can work and do certain things. But again, that would be like visiting that store. And I'm sure in Hollister there's the same type of store where geeks are getting gear and they can post their stuff. It's
well,
always felt
no
like a
Mac outlets here. I ran into a similar thing.
I agree.
There used to be in Salinas, but they closed down.
How about Gilroy? Is that close by?
No, but it's closer than, say, San Jose.
Yeah.
Well, unfortunately, I don't have anything more than that. I don't know anybody that's in that
okay,
area.
If anyone listening wants to make some money and has expertise, please call the show and I will...
Actually, do better. Just go up to geekspeak.org and send us email. And
Neil, make sure you send us your email with your contact info just in case somebody contacts us.
All right, thank you.
We can get you two together.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much for the call. We're taking calls with questions and comments of technology. We're now going to go to Aromas. Aromas has Bob. Bob, what's your question?
Hi, guys. I have an XP operating system, and I ran across this window one time that asked me to, eliminate all but the latest backup, and I haven't been able to find it. I thought maybe one of you guys might know what I'm talking about.
Eliminate all but the most recent backup?
Yeah.
I know what that is.
All right, Sean is on it. He's got a Windows XP in front of him. He's going to start figuring it out. So are you making regular backups right now?
Yes.
What it is if you go in to clean up all the stuff on your hard drive, one of the options is that you can get rid of all your automatic updates.
Right.
Excuse me, it's Hold on here. System restore. So all of your hard drives have what's called system restore. It's a percentage of the hard drive that keeps information about what you've done over your last various sessions. That way, if you can't get into Windows XP, you can boot into safe mode, go to system restore, and choose the last, you know, you're making what's called these images.
Last safe.
Yeah, these last safe images of where your system actually worked. So you choose that, and then you go back into Windows XP, and you're basically running Windows XP from that point in time.
And this is like drivers and things like
that. So if you did anything new since that period, let's say it was last Saturday, was the last time your computer worked normally that you remember. So you go back to last Saturday. So anything you did during the week is going to be gone.
But not like files you've made and stuff, like Word files or anything like that.
Yeah, anything.
Really?
Even files on your hard drive. Sure. Unless you turned off system restore on those hard drives. So it saves this information, but this information takes up space on your hard drive. So if you go into your hard drive and you're going to clean up all your temporary files, one of the options you can choose is to get rid of all your system restores except for the latest one. And then it gets rid of those, gives you a little more hard disk space. But if something happens to your system, you can only go back to your last, you know, system restore.
Bob, does that help you out?
Yes. Where again do I find that?
So if you go to Control Panel, and you go to System, it'll bring up System Properties, and then you click on the System Restore tab. That's where you can access System Restore for all your hard drives.
Okay.
And if you want to actually go back to a previous version of your system, you boot into safe mode and then just follow the directions.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you, Bob, for the call.
Thank you.
We're taking questions and comments of technology. The phone numbers are 476-2800, toll-free at 1-800-655-5877. And we do have a couple more people right now on the line. From Santa Cruz, Zach, welcome to GeekSpeak. Zach, what's your question today?
Hi. I've got a 6-year-old Sony Vaio laptop, and it's got Windows ME on it, and I need a new operating system, and I was considering maybe doing some kind of Linux operating system. I wonder if you guys have any recommendations.
You know, I went to the Intel Developer Forum a couple of weeks ago, and Ubuntu was there, so I grabbed one of their CDs, and I grabbed Kubuntu too, which has a different interface, just to play with it. So on a whim, I just threw it in my notebook and powered it on, and it booted off the CD. I was in the operating system, and I was surfing on the web within minutes.
Oh,
it's
really?
Amazing. And I didn't even install it on my computer. I just booted off their CD.
Oh,
so,
wow.
So that's what I would recommend. You can download go to Ubuntu, ubuntu.com, and download their image, burn the disk, boot it on your computer, and play with it. And if you like it, you can just install it from there.
Okay, that's great.
Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Well, did you ever install it? Or are you just using Netflix?
I haven't yet.
Yeah.
You know what? I didn't see any reason to.
Yeah.
I could just boot off this and use it at any time.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
I was really amazed. Although, you're only one thing, the downfall of just booting off a CD is you don't have your video driver installed. So the max resolution is 1024 by 768, which is kind of small. So you will want to install it and install the proper video driver so that you can take advantage of your monitor, especially if it's a large monitor, and your sound files and so on. You'd probably want to install it at some point. But just to see if it works on your machine, what a great way to go. And it's
definitely
very, you know,
now,
easy to do.
Downloading the CD and burning a CD is a little difficult. They do sell them, right?
Yeah, you can go to Ubuntu.com and even ask them to send you a CD.
But they do charge for that, correct?
Miles, do you know if they charge?
Do you know Ubuntu charges for their CD?
No, they don't. It's actually free shipping.
Why do they do that?
It's a promotional thing. They're trying to get the word out there. Ubuntu and Linux in general is the underdog. You have the 800-pound gorilla that is Microsoft, and you have another great effort from Apple and their OS X. So at this point, it's just free advertising to be able to send the CD out.
Right. So if you want to try Ubuntu and it works on, you can get it working on a Macintosh or a Windows machine. I don't know if they've got G4. I don't think they do, actually, versions still. Do you know?
Oh, PowerPC versions?
PowerPC versions.
I don't know.
But you'd learn from Ubuntu.com.
They might, actually.
So the site is Ubuntu, ubuntu.com, and it's an alternative operating system. They will send you a free CD, and you can try it out without any problems, really. It's just easy to use. All right, so let's go ahead and take a call from Watson, where we are taking calls, you're welcome to call in with questions and comments of technology. We'll answer anything you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll free at 1-800-655-5877. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And the geeks today are Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Alex Slias. I'm Lyle Troxell. And we now go to Watsonville. Judith, welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi.
I usually enjoy listening to Dr. Dawn before you, but sometimes I don't wake up quite in time.
Isn't she great? I was hearing her show today, and she was just wonderful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then I like to try and get it off the computer, you know, off the online and download it.
Sure,
and
the podcast the, available through NPR.
The podcast, the problem, I can get the podcast. The podcast is 25 megabytes, and I have dial-up, so it takes a long time. And
sure.
I noticed on her she has a download, and it seems to say that it will be 15 megabytes for the whole show. I don't know whether that's necessary. I mean, the one that I was trying to download, but then I was having trouble downloading it what it would do. It would start downloading it, and it said it was a 15 megabyte file, but then it would only download like 1.5 megabytes.
And then it would stop?
And it would stop.
Yeah.
And it's not that I have dial-up, so, and it's not that I got kicked offline. And I tried it a couple times, and it happened. And I didn't know where the problem with that might be.
Sounds like it timed out.
Yeah.
So they assume that you have a faster connection, and so you have
No,
to...
it's not that. There's something problematic with your system. What computer system do you have?
I have a Macintosh.
Is it an older? Is it like a G?
It's a 10-point... I'm running 10-point... 4.0.
Okay.
That's, whatever. It's
that's
the,
new.
What was
that's
latest? 10.4.10.
Does it have wireless?
What?
Does it have wireless?
No.
Okay.
It's wired.
And
are you using Firefox or Safari?
I think I was using Safari.
Okay.
I use both, but I think I was probably using Safari when I was doing that.
Yeah. I don't see any sizes on Dr. Dawn's site, which is jivemedia.com/askdrdawn.
Well, when you start downloading it is when it comes up on the little downloads window.
Mm-hmm.
It says, you know, whatever percent of a file is such, how big.
Right.
That's when I would see how large it was.
Right. Well, the most recent show I'm going to try downloading right now to make sure it works on my system. I have a feeling it's your system, unfortunately. Yeah, it says 14.7 megabytes. That's
well, usually
right.
I don't have trouble downloading big files.
Yeah. Well, I don't have a solution for you on this one. I would assume that there's a couple ways to handle this. One is to try to get it downloaded on a different machine, because it just worked on mine, for example.
Uh-huh.
And if you've got a friend that can download it for you and transfer it on like a little fob, USB thing, that would work. The other option is go ahead and try the larger download from NPR. It's possible that Charlie and Dawn have a problem with their website. I doubt it. The other thing is, definitely try it on both your browsers to make sure it's gonna work out.
Okay.
It was really easy to download the show from last week. That's the one they have up right now, of course, because they just recorded earlier today. And it's I'm sure I could play it right now too. But
Well, usually I didn't have trouble playing the piece of it that got downloaded. That was not a problem. It was just that it only downloaded the first 5 minutes or something.
Right. Right.
That I have trouble with sometimes with KUSP is since I have dial-up, it seems like the streams are kind of large and they tend to...
Yeah, you know, KUSP's audio, a lot of our audio is really wonderful music, and when you encrypt that music or you try to make that smaller, you lose a lot of quality. And so we've taken this kind of middle ground where it's pretty good streaming audio content. For talk shows, you don't need as much quality of audio, but because the station does so much music... we keep it at a higher bit rate, and that it is troublesome to
for people with dial-up. And I just want to sort of put. If, I don't know whether there's any way. If I know some places they have streams for people
multiple
with
streams.
Dial-up.
Yeah,
I just want to put that out.
Okay.
For public radio for those of us out.
Sure, I will mention it to the staff here that there's some people with dial-up that would like to listen via the internet.
Internet, and
thank
it's
you.
Really hard.
And a regular listener, Judith. Thank you so much for
okay.
calling up.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Bye bye. The phone lines are open. You're welcome to call us with any questions you'd like. The phone numbers are 476-2800. Again, that's 476-2800. Or toll-free anywhere on the West Coast, I think, 1-800-655-KUSP. Again, that's 1-800-655-KUSP. And as we wait for people to call in, more news that we didn't get to? What's up with One Laptop per Child program? Miles?
The One Laptop per Child program, the initiative to provide laptops to children in developing countries, has now announced that people in developed countries, such as the U.S., can purchase them. And the idea behind them is that you are actually purchasing two but getting one. It's kind of different from what we're used to, the two-for-one deal, you're getting one for two. The idea there is that you're spending, it's about $400, and you're going to be paying for or subsidizing the cost of a laptop for a child in a developing country.
The cost for the laptop and the shipping and the training.
Right.
A lot of it, actually. Now, these laptops in the beginning was like $100 laptops. That was their goal. It sounds like they're not hitting that.
That was
mark.
Their target, and today they're at about $188.
Right. So $400 makes sense because that's about the cost of two.
Right.
Right.
But some of that has also been like the depreciation of the U.S. dollar. It's been
and if you're interested,
yeah.
If you're interested in doing this one laptop per child, it's XO. Do you know the URL? Well, we'll figure it out on
Laptop.org.
Laptop.org.
So I heard there were marketing.
Laptop.org has information on that. It probably does have links to where to purchase
sign up.
It.
Yeah, what you actually need to do, you need to go to the site and sign up with your email address, and they're going to email you when they're available because right now you.
They said by Christmas, I think, they expect to have them sent out?
On November 12th. Give one, get one starting November 12th, and you have to sign up with your email address to get notified for this. I think you need to get in a queue because I think there's going to be too many people.
I heard there's marketing concerns that kids in the U.S. expect a much higher level of performance from a notebook than what the one laptop, you know, $180 version delivers.
I would also imagine it depends upon age. If you have a middle school or high school student, this is probably not the laptop for them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they will have the expectation of games. I mean, that's the first thing that comes to mind for that, the high-resolution first-person shooter style or
right,
like.
Yeah.
Whereas I see the one laptop per child as being targeted more toward 8-year-olds.
Mm-hmm. I would assume that...
And elder people who just need to check their email.
These laptops are pretty amazing.
The laptops are actually made with children in mind. The keyboard is smaller. It's
oh, really?
Made for small fingers. It's not a... it's not a big person. It's not an adult's laptop that has a bunch of different software. It's from the ground up made for kids.
Now, we were contacted by a homeless person, sent us an email, remember? This is about a week or two ago. And he is interested in this because he can generate his own power to keep it going.
That's a really good point.
He's been asking us about how to power from a motorcycle, battery, battery, you know, ways that he can keep his notebook running. And he wants one of these things. Just so he doesn't have to plug it in anywhere.
Right, because you don't. You can generate your own power by just cranking it. Or
right, just don't expect something like Windows or OS 10. It's made it's made so that kids who have no computer experience or very little will be able to use it without a problem. Apparently, people that have used computers before or have experience with Windows or OS 10 are lost to some extent.
Can you browse the internet with it?
Yes.
The internet?
Yes. Okay.
What's the rendering? What's the browser rendering? Is it Firefox?
Yes, it's the Mozilla engine. Uh-huh. And yes, you can browse the net. It has Wi-Fi B and G. It might have A as well, but B and G. And it also has a mesh network. So if you have multiple laptops together, they can all talk to one another directly. Mm-hmm. And then if you have one laptop that's within range of Wi-Fi, but the other laptops are not, the others can route through to the internet through that laptop that does have an internet connection.
It's interesting, the idea that this is a perfect device for people off the grid, homeless. It seems like is there going to be a second market here for them, or are they still too expensive?
I want one for my daughter.
Yeah, you want one for your daughter?
Yeah, if she can. Yeah, I don't have to worry about it getting beat on.
Fork out $400 and you're helping someone
else
too.
Yeah, actually, I just want one. But
that's not bad.
$400. Yeah, you know what, though? For $400, you can get a really... inexpensive. I mean, I like the aspect of helping somebody.
Yeah.
If it really does help somebody.
Yeah.
I guess I'm just pessimistic in that way. I really need to.
They really are going to buy
these laptops are designed for kids. It's not like getting a full laptop and just giving it to the kid. This is
the right
made
one for
with kids in mind. We really need to see ruggedized plastic.
So I'm getting a couple at my job for some research in the arts division. So for digital arts new media program. So I will be playing with them and we'll see them. And it's if you're interested in giving a laptop to someone, xogiving.org. Excuse me, xogiving.org. We can take one more question today. We're going to go to Reno. Reno in Carmel Valley. Welcome to Geek Speak.
Hi.
Hi, what's your question today?
I'm a newbie. I just got a computer and I've got Windows XP on there and I'm signed up for some internet connection with an ISP. And I need to know what kind of antivirus, firewall, whatever kind of protection I need on there so I don't get bugs in there.
Okay. We have some standard recommendations. Sean's got a great article that's going to cover all of this, but it's not finished yet. What do we do here right now guys for Reno?
It can be finished quickly. Yeah? I'm just not going to post it until we get the new site up.
So you're putting it on me?
Yeah.
Okay, how do we help Reno?
Okay, can you give me some vendors or somewhere to go?
Well, there's Symantec or Norton.
Okay.
Let's go with the
free ones. There's AVG.
AVG free. So if you go to free.grisoft.com.
Okay, free. Dot what?
Grisoft. G R I S O F T.
Okay, Grisoft. .com. Okay.
You can download a free antivirus, and this is corporate level, updated daily. Really good antivirus software that they make available in single license version. For people for free. They also have an internet security app that you can download and anti-spyware now.
Okay.
So I really recommend that.
Yeah, I would recommend things like Zone Alarm as well.
You think so? That's not
a network security.
That's more of a firewall.
Yeah, and I would recommend it over the standard Windows firewall.
Yeah.
One more thing before we run out of time is make sure you just got this machine. Make sure you apply all of the Windows updates. It's number one thing before you get any software.
Okay, so the show that I'm going to actually recommend, since the URL and there's multiple things going on, we wrote up a pretty good one on at geekspeak.org, the show date. You go to shows and click on the archive.
Okay.
It's the 2006 April 1st, which is funny that I'm sending you that way, but April 1st on 2006, we have a great write-up about the URLs and stuff for protecting your machine. It was a really nice write-up from Sean.
Very good.
We'll get that article posted soon. And we're going to it's going to be a green article. We'll update all the time as things change. So hopefully soon you'll be able to go to geekspeak.org and get access to our recommendations for the software.
Thank you so much for the call.
Thank you for helping me. Bye.
GeekSpeak on KSP is supported by Dina Eastwood's Faces of Hope, at an event for ending poverty both locally and globally at Client Eastwood's Tema Golf Club in Carmel on Sunday, September 30th. Information and tickets at risinginternational.org or 662-9295. The Geeks this morning were Miles Elam, Sean Cleveland, and Alex Lias. Thank you, Geeks, for joining us today.
Yeah, thank
Always
you.
A pleasure.
Good talking to you, Alex.
Nice talking to you guys.
And thank you for listening to Geek Speak. Geek Speak is a registered service mark of Online Tonight with David Lawrence and is used by permission. GeekSpeak is supported by a grant from Santa Cruz Electronics and offering an extensive selection of computer and electronic parts as well as support services. Santa Cruz Electronics is open daily at 2808 SoCal Avenue and online at santacruzelectronics.com. Broadcasting in HD radio on 88.9 FM, this is Central Coast Public Radio KOSP Santa Cruz, KBDH San Aro. You just listened to another episode of GeekSpeak via our podcast. Would you do us a favor? Please go to your favorite podcasting index site, whether it be iTunes, Dig.com, Odeo, or another site, and write a review or give us a vote to let others know what you think about GeekSpeak. Thanks, that'd really help us out. GeekSpeak is supported by PreownedCar.com, PreownedCar.com, where anyone can post their vehicle for sale or browse to purchase a pre-owned car from other car owners. More information available at PreownedCar.com. This is Lyle Troxell for KUSP. Thanks for listening.